Hey guys, this is Corey, the engineer and producer for the Taste Masters podcast. Before we get into this episode, I want to take a minute to let you know that Fuse Audio Recording is looking for new clients. If you currently have or want to start a podcast, we can help you make it sound professional and polished. We can also help you with your other recording needs, such as audiobooks, music, etc. With music specifically, we offer recording and editing services, mixing, and mastering. Whether large or small, we would love to help you with your next project. You can find us on Instagram at @fuse_audio. Enjoy the episode, and until the next recording, my friends.
Listening to the Taste Masters, where we sit down and learn from artists within the world of craft beer, liquor, and various fermentation techniques. All right, guys, we are in the future of Helper Beer in Helper, Utah. The old, like, it's like the heart of Utah, I guess, kind of. And I'm here with Clint Jones from Hero Valley. Clint, what's up, man?
How you doing?
Dude, I'm doing well. Hair's looking good. You guys are handsome. And we're in Helper. It's beautiful. And not too cold, great roads. How was the drive?
The drive was easy, you know, a little trouble coming through Provo, but other than that, it was smooth sailing.
I like that. Hell yeah. Thanks for coming, brother.
Absolutely.
And I want to introduce you to someone I look up to and I think is really cool in the brewing industry, and that's Mr. Jaron Anderson. Jaron, welcome, brother.
Thank you.
So, right off the bat, you are an award-winning beer maker.
Yeah.
So, how's it feel to have accolades like that?
Oh, I don't know. I don't really think about it too much. Yeah. Although I do like to compete, you know. There is a competitive part of me that wants to put beer out there, you know, into competitions and do well, you know. So,
yeah.
And it's always nice to know that you're doing well with the judges and stuff like that. So it's good feedback. That's really what I look forward to the most, is just like seeing what judges were like, what kind did well and what we didn't do.
Unbridled, unbiased feedback. Mm-hmm. Could be good, could be, I don't know how people look at that, but I know getting notes from a test or from a judging, you're like, oh, I don't know what this guy was thinking or the gal was thinking, but at the same time, you're like, oh, maybe I do need to, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. Sometimes, yeah, you'll get a note and you'll be like, ooh, that guy doesn't know what he's talking about. But then, you know, maybe you got to kind of take a step back and
yeah,
find a mirror or whatever and, you know, ask yourself the tough questions.
Yeah, that's true. Absolutely. Another question I want to ask you, we're in Helper. Okay. Why the hell are you living in Helper, Utah?
Oh, well, cause let's see, one of my best buds, Stu Callis, he goes by Charles Callis down here. That's his given name. He moved down here 10 or 11 years ago to do a 6-month long internship with painting with David Dorn, and David Dorn was formerly a painting professor over at the University of Utah. Anyway, Stu never moved back to Salt Lake. He just stayed here. And so he was like the best man at my wedding, you know? And so grew up with him. Anyway, I would come down here and visit a couple times a month and or every other month or whatever. And after a few years, Amy and I, my wife Amy and I, were like, hey, we could live here. And then we were like, but we'd have to start a brewery. And then we were like, that'll probably never happen. So we just kind of like, you know, never really expected to do that. And then a couple years later, another good friend of mine, Ellis Palson, moved down here, and he was like, dude, you gotta start a brewery down here. And I was like, I just don't think that's a good idea. And then eventually one day we were on the top of a mountain on Ryan Peak in Southern Idaho, watching the solar eclipse a few years ago. This is 2017.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And we had this spiritual experience watching the solar eclipse. I don't know if you guys saw it, like, happened, the totality thing, but it was spiritual is the only way I could put it. Like the second it went into totality, like I lost my emotions. It was just like crying and just like everyone around was just like jumping around and hollering like they were like monkeys or something. It was really primal and weird. Anyway, after that, my buddy Alice is like, he was talking about Helper. He's like, now's the time. You got to think about this. And I was like, we came away from that being like, Amy and I being like, all right, we're going to do it. So a week later was Labor Day. We came down here and kind of started looking around and formulating a business plan and all that. And that's been, you know, 4.5 years ago, and here we are, we're a couple weeks away from starting construction. So, but we just love it down here because, I mean, as you can see, the surrounding, you know, landscape is incredible. And I really like the air quality. Not being on the Wasatch Front is awesome with that.
Oh, both of you are like that, huh?
I love it. But then also the access to outdoor recreation down here is incredible. The rock climbing, the mountain biking, fishing, you know,
all the
river
above.
Rafting.
Hey, so we're going to have to stop by in the summer, Clint, and come
Absolutely.
Over and hang out. But Clint, you come from a small brewery. You know, you guys a little system, little setup. This will be another kind of small, a little touch bigger than yours, but still small, right? You mentioned the location and how it's prime. You like that spot. What's it like being on not Salt Lake County, in Salt Lake County, with a small brew house and making beer for the locals? Like,
yeah, I mean, I think getting that good local fan base and community built up is, you know, super important. And then the other thing for us in Heber, you know, we're right on Highway 40, that first light when you're coming in, you know, so somebody like you that's just passing through on their way to Provo or wherever else, it's, you know, super easy to stop off. And especially now, we've upgraded our canning operation a little bit. So there's always a good variety available. And I think, when I drove up here this morning, I mean, I don't know how many times during the summer we're heading down to the Swell or over to Fruta or wherever. And I mean, we're literally 15 seconds off of Highway 6 right here. And so this will, I think for me and a lot of other people, be a pretty sweet spot to stop when you're going out to do some adventures and pick up some good beer.
I like that. And I think location's key. It's prime. I love it. Yeah. That's why I love Clint's, because Clint's is really... All you got to do is take a left.
Yeah, it's easy to just pop off the road there.
Yeah, and you're right here. I remember, your text message was like, it's right across the street from the gas station. I'm like, there's no way. Yeah, it is. Like, we can literally throw a stone at the gas station right now.
Yeah.
And I'm excited to see where this is going to go. I guess, Clint, you have beers in front of us. Jaron, you haven't, when's the last time you had a Heber Valley beer?
Oh, it's probably been 8 or 9 months, I think.
So I did, too long.
I did stop off there this past summer and was not able to pick any up because they were closed. I got there too early in the day. But
yeah.
I'm glad
Normally
that you
I've been
some.
Yeah. I know it's frustrating for some people, but normally I'm always there. I show up pretty early in the morning and brew and try to get everything done by the time we open. Otherwise we're walking on top of the servers
bumping bums with everyone.
But either way, and now it's to the point where I have to like lock the back doors because there's, sometimes there's people that stop by and you see them out the window and you're like, oh, what's up, you know, invite them in. But there's a lot of people that stop in that, let's say, are uninvited. And it's like always right when you're in the middle of transfer, you know, doing something important and they don't realize, they're like, think that making beer is just, you know, you just sit around and drink beer and, you know, like boiling a stew for hours or something. Yeah. I don't know. Anyway, long story short, we have to, it's annoying, but we've got to keep it locked up in the mornings.
It's all good, my man. We'll just bang on the windows when we go next time, Jaron.
You know, I did bang on the windows and I saw somebody in there. It probably was you.
It's probably me.
But I didn't want to be that guy to bug you, so I just walked away.
Well, thanks, but
next time I will.
Next time you will bug me,
So you eyed the Kolsch that
I want to try all of them.
What's so special about Kolsches? Why do you like Kolsch so much?
Ooh, I've been to Köln, Germany, and I was there for like 3 or 4 days and drank I couldn't even tell you, endless amounts of Kolsch. Like I would go to like a kiosk, which is just like a, you know, a corner store or whatever. And I'd buy three like bomber sized, like 22 ounce bottles of Kolsch and Reisdorf. And I would drink all three of them. And then I would take, then I'd take them, take the bottles back to the bottle deposit thing. And I get enough money to buy one more. And I did that. Like, and then we also went to a couple, like, you know, Roy houses where they give you the stanges, like the tray full of stanges, and you just pound them.
Wow.
So that's where I learned to love Kolsch, was in Köln, where that's wow. all they drink.
Hell yeah. So, Clint, tell us about this Kolsch. I know we talked about it last time you were here, but...
Yeah, relatively traditional, 4.7 on ABV. I use the Dieter strain from Imperial. And, I mean, it's mostly... Actually, it's Pilsner malt from James. It's Solstice.
Hey!
A little bit of Munich malt, just to, you know, give it a little bit of color. It's still, you know, super light, but... And then we've got some Tettnang and Hallertau Mittefrühe in there. So, yeah.
Lovely.
You are just drooling right now. Right? Let's open it. Which glass would you like to use?
Plug it in there.
Do the honors. Would you do, Jaron? While you do that, I have a couple questions for you. I want to know, first craft beer ever?
Sierra Nevada. Of course. Sierra Nevada got
Never heard of it.
Sierra Nevada Pale Ale.
And how was it? What did you blow your mind? Tell us the experience. Did you hate it? Did you love it? Did you...
I thought it was like so bitter and so hoppy. It was, you know, but I immediately loved it, you know, because it had a flavor unlike, you know, like a Coors or something, which I do love Coors and Miller Lite, it was just so much flavor and aroma that kept me coming back for more, you know? And it made me fall in love with beer for sure.
It did, huh? And yeah. Then...
Cheers.
Cheers, boys. Good old Clint, dude. You've yet to disappoint me, homie.
Mmm. Ooh, yeah. That's lovely.
Look at that.
Mm. I could drink a few of those.
Yeah, we tried. This one stays on tap most of the time. Yeah.
It's just too easy. It's too easy.
That's good. Sometimes you get a Kolsch and it's not Kolschy, but this is
Kolschy.
Yeah.
I like it. First time brewing. Where'd you get your first gig brewing?
Well, I started making beer at Red Rock Brewery in like 2009. Well, I started working at Red Rock in 2007 as a busboy. And I did that for a couple years. And after a couple years, I was like, I don't want to be a busboy the rest of my life. And so, in 2009, they opened Brewhouse 2. And that's when I started bugging Kevin Templin about maybe getting a job in the brewhouse, helping out here and there. And he was like, yeah, well, whenever if I can find a job for you, I will, you know. And after about a year or so of me bugging him, he's like, all right, I got a job for you. And I went and helped bottle Rev 2 days in a row. And that was it. And then like a couple months later, I kept bugging him. And then a couple months later, he walked up to me. He's like, all right, I got a job. It's putting labels on bottles one by one with a hand crank labeler. And oh. I was like, okay. So I started doing that 3 days a week. And then I was still busing a couple days a week. And I did that for like a year. And then we got like a automatic labeler and
You lost your job.
Well, you know, in the meantime, I was like, you know, I was learning all the other stuff, like learning how to clean a tank and wash kegs and filter beer. And then eventually, you know, a couple guys moved on from the brewery and all of a sudden I was making work. So
look at you. I like that. And after how long were you at Red Rock Brewing there?
until 2018. So, and then I moved to TF. So it's like middle of 2018 when I left Red Rock and started helping Kevin at TF before we opened. So,
and how was Bring at TF? How was just, you know, transitioning from Red Rock, seeing him there, and then seeing him at his own new place?
Oh, it's great. Yeah. Well, it was great because brand new equipment, awesome, you know, kind of reinvigorated, more inspired to create new beers with a new, you know, whole new kind of fresh palate going on. And it's been really good. It's been a lot of fun. It's been educational to kind of see all the things that, like, starting a brewery from the ground up and, like, how that kind of works and what went really well and what didn't, you know, that's going to translate here really well, I think, for us.
Which brings us to, you know, where we're at right now. And you gave Clint and I the tour this morning. Mm. I think I'm super excited for this place. I think it's going to have great potential. I'm curious to know, does Helper need a beer scene? Do they need a place to come drink? Helper known for beer drinkers?
Oh, yeah. So, well, Carbon County is possibly the only county in Utah that is predominantly non-LDS. And it historically, per capita, has, like, the most drinking. like people drink more here per capita than, like, any other county in Utah, which is kind of crazy. So, like, a couple of years ago, I saw, like, a stat from the DAVC that Carbon County sells more alcohol than all of Utah County does.
What?
And there's 30,000 residents here, and Utah County's got, like, 500,000 or something like that. So think about that. So, yes, because there's a bar, and it's a beautiful, beautiful dive bar called the Regis Club.
Philbin, you know that guy.
But that's kind of all there is. And there's a sandwich shop, and then there's a diner called Bounce Rock. And so, yes, we do need something more here.
Nice.
And world-class craft beer and pizza is gonna be it.
You know? I like that. Clint, you're kind of ahead of where, you know, this vision of, in Helper, Jaron has the idea of, we're gonna put beer, you know, world-class beer in Helper, Utah. You did the same thing in a way where I'm doing this in Heber. Heber needs a beer scene, right? So take us to, you're getting a little deja vu by seeing what Jaron's going through right now?
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, honestly, when Greg and I started, we knew that Heber needed a brewery. We were relatively confident that we could pull it off. We've got a good friend that has a similar, you know, I think they've got a 5-barrel brew house. He's doing close to 900 barrels a year out of that small system in New Smyrna Beach in Florida. And he's been kind of like my mentor and helping avoid some pitfalls and trying to get our spot set up as you know, efficiently as possible. But I thought, you know, that I knew in my gut that Heber had the community and had enough to support a brewery, but it, you know, trying to, there's no information really to pull on, or like how many people, you know, are we going to be able to even sell that much beer? And then in the reality now, looking back, and everybody always says that, you know, they wish they would have gone bigger from the start. I mean, we didn't have a ton of money to go bigger, but now we're at the point, I think, we have a 3.5-barrel brew house, and I, this last year, did around 460 barrels, which is about as, I don't know how I'm gonna, well, we got a new 10-barrel fermenter now, so I get to triple batch into that thing, and should be close to 550 barrels this year.
That's exciting.
And, wow. And you know, it's always like you're looking ahead. You're like, okay, now I think we've got enough beer left over. We can maybe start going into some restaurants or maybe getting at least a brand like into the state liquor stores. But then by the time it gets like to, you know, realizing that we're already sold out of that beer. And so we've been, I think it's been good that we're kind of incrementally, things have just kind of kept getting busier and busier. And I think that kind of pass through traffic and people, you know, the word is slowly, like naturally gotten out. So we've just been getting busy. You know, we could sell more beer than we are right now.
Yeah.
But it's also nice to kind of keep it in a level that I guess we're comfortable with.
You can control it. You have a little more control in that manner.
So,
I mean, when are we going to see a Gila Valley expand? It'll get a little bigger.
I don't know. We're
set up. You want to come to Helper?
Yeah, maybe. This is a sweet spot for sure. Is it in Helper? Is the diner that you're talking about, is it like a log building? Or there's a restaurant.
Oh.
I think they add, at least on the menu or something, it said something about they're brewing their own beer.
No, that is not the case.
Do you know the place I'm talking about?
Yeah, the Log Cabin Building. Yeah. That's down in Price, actually.
Okay,
it's right off the highway.
Yeah.
And there's a restaurant there called Crosscut Brewery. But they don't actually make beer.
That's what I was... I mean, it was probably a couple of years ago, but... You know, normally coming back from camping or doing whatever adventure, like somewhere in here is always where we want to stop and like grab some food and you know, I'm like, I don't know how many times coming through here, I'm like, it would be so awesome if there was...
Boom.
It's a perfect little waypoint for sure.
Absolutely.
I'm excited because yours is that same way for me. I feel like if I need to go to Park City or I need to go up to the reservoirs, I love going up there to paddleboard. And so you'll be seeing my face there more often.
Perfect.
Right. And I like what you're doing. I'm excited to see how even in the past, you know, 5-6 months you've grown at Heber Valley and like it's getting me excited for Jaren because you're going to do the same thing where you're going to get all these new toys and then you're going to christen them and then you have to, you know, Clint and I know when this puppy's fired up and ready to go because we're going to come and celebrate the opening day.
Oh, yeah.
Break them champagne bottles open.
Definitely let you know. We'll have a big, you know, soft opening type party and invite everybody.
It's out there, but what's the ETA for Helper Beer being open? I know that's a shot in the dark, but...
Well, we're looking at kind of signing all the papers for the loan in the next couple of weeks here, and then we can start construction, and we've got everything kind of teed up for that with contractor and permitting and stuff like that. So our contractor thinks he could get it done in 4 to 6 months, and... We're not doing a whole lot here other than the biggest project is putting in slot drains and doing the floor.
Yeah.
But other than that, redoing the bathrooms and stuff, it'll be easy. We will be upgrading the electrical system here, 3-phase, you know, 480, but.
That's awesome. And so we're thinking probably this time next year?
I'd like to be open by August, but we'll see if that can happen.
Yeah, so
it also like getting a brew house here, if we, you know, shipping right now is challenging worldwide. And so that might be one of our biggest challenges that we're going to face.
Absolutely. I think you'll be, I see what Clint's been doing over at Heber Valley and I see what you're about to do. And I'm just like, I want to be in your guys' shoes. Like I see this is the before and the after in a way. Right. And it's super cool. You guys have this dream, you guys are this passion and you guys started something and you guys are making it happen. I mean,
right.
I mean, I don't know. You guys are awesome. And I'm humbled to be here, you know, with you guys and pick your brains. Yeah. But let's break open another one if you don't mind.
Yeah.
Which one looks, we got one from Wasatch. We have other beers over, you know, at the table. And then we have a sour that, Clint's been
that might be
experimental.
It's good, but it'll
wreck the old palate.
Yeah,
let's try this. Let's
go for that.
The old heavy boy. Mm. Yeah, so that's Neil's made that one. The new Wasatch Double. I don't know what I grab what hops he used. I tried it last night, and it was a tasty boy. Nice. That's for sure. And not hazy, which I appreciated.
It's good to mix that up a little.
Jaren, while we were pouring these beers, I want to ask, when it comes to your upcoming from through Red Rock and then TF and helping out, are you still making your way up there and helping Red Rock or TF?
No, I haven't had anything to do with Red Rock since I left in 2018. I do love Red Rock for, you know, kind of giving me my start, and it was a lot of years there. You know, I worked there for like 12 years. But yeah, I still go up to work at TF on, you know, I'm there Monday morning, and I'll do Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then just leave Wednesday night and come back down here.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been doing that for the past, you know, couple years.
So you make that drive every, like,
I don't drive it back and forth every day. When I go up to Salt Lake, I'll stay for the two nights. And
gotcha.
My buddy, Nolan, what up, Nolan? He's got a spare room that I just crash out in, you know. I try and, you know, be quiet.
I didn't know you were up there, dude. I would have.
Yeah, I'm seeing more. It's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, but I'm like a ghost. I'm like in and out. I make a ton of beer, and then I come back down here.
Nice. And how long do you think you'll be doing that?
I'll probably be doing that a couple more months. It just depends on like how construction goes, and because at a certain point, I'm just going to have to be like overseeing, you know, the process down here, build out and all that. So I would imagine by like middle of summer, I'm going to have to hang up my boots there, which is sad, you know, because it's been really good working there, and I've worked for Kevin for
too long,
you know, a long time, and you know, I don't want to lose him, and I don't think he wants to lose me, but you know, it's time to kind of get this thing going, brother.
Sit tight. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by Hopkins Brewing Company. Hopkins Brewing is located off 21st South in Salt Lake. Hopkins has live music, local art, and they use locally grown and sustainable ingredients in both their food and craft beer. Their food menu is off the charts. Their handcrafted beer is also fantastic. Upon checking out, use the code TASTEMASTERS to get 10% off any food. That's right. Use the code TASTEMASTERS to get 10% off your entire meal. Come get a pint at Hopkins and support your local breweries. This episode's also brought to you by you, if you want to be. We are looking for sponsors and would love to have you as part of our team. Feel free to email us for details at thetastemastersdrink@gmail.com or DM us through all social media platforms. Well, you're making the comment about, you know, hanging the boots one day. What made you, you know, you were a bus boy at Red Rock and you wanted to be a brewer, but did you think growing up, I'm going to make beer?
It's funny that you asked that. I always was like mystified by like beer and brewing, even as a younger kid. Like one of my oldest brother, his best friend started home brewing in like the 90s, right? And he ended up moving to Idaho Falls, and he now, he's like the manager of the Modelo malting facility up there. Hmm. And he still homebrews to this day. And I see him every year when I go up there. But it's just, I remember he made a beer once with hops that he found on the backside of Timpanogos. And I never got to try that beer because it was a homebrew batch that he made like 5 gallons of, you know? And when he made it, I was like 14 years old or something, but I wanted to try it. I was like mystified by it. And I also remember him being like, you know, there's breweries in Salt Lake City. And I was like, what, how can this be in Utah? You know? And then I, you know, cause I grew up in Provo. I moved to Salt Lake City, you know, when I was like 22, after living in Olympia, Washington, and for a couple of years, and I got a job at Red Rock, and I was just like, I was like, that was like all I wanted to do is like, I wanted to get a job at a brewery just because I was like, I loved craft beer, right? And then Red Rock, I just kind of stumbled into it, you know? And every time a new beer would pop up, I would try it, you know? And so over a couple of years, I had tried like, you know, 50 different styles of beer, and I just kept getting more and more into it. And it just kind of grabbed me, you know. I don't really know how to explain it, but in a weird way, I do feel like
you're meant to do this job.
There was pulled to it.
That's really cool. Cause you've gone to a lot of beer conferences, you've gone to a lot of beer competitions, you've gone to a lot of places with a lot of breweries. So you've been in the scene for quite some time. Mm-hmm. What's some of the best advice you've ever been given, as a brewer, from a brewer?
The best advice is always just like, keep it clean. Just be, just clean it again and again and again. Cleanliness is the holiness of the brewing world. I think you can taste it in people's beer. You know, how clean their brew house is how clean their beer is. Hmm. And that's something I think that has been instilled in me working for Kevin, because he is obsessive with cleaning, and I don't think I was when I first started working in the brewery. I didn't know anything, but the one thing that was always there was like, clean it more, do it again, you know. You can never be too clean from the floor to the ceiling, you know.
Yeah. So you can take some of those behaviors and bring it to helper?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's ingrained in me at this point. Mm. The other thing would be like, you know, don't put too much beer in the beer, you know. When you're making wort or any recipe, people tend to kind of put like 30 different specialty grains in there and tons of hops or whatever. It's like, well, sometimes that can get a little bit muddled. It's like, and you're not letting each ingredient kind of, you know, do its job and speak its, you know, speak out. And so that's one thing I've learned over the past few years, is like, just don't put too much beer in the beer.
Yeah. Simplify it in a way, right?
Yeah.
Clint, what's a beer you've made that you've overcomplicated and that you regret? Cause you're like, I just did way too much on this.
One that really jumps out, just our initial amber ale that we had, when we first opened. We opened a few months before we changed over to,
5%, right?
5%. And just, I totally blew it scaling that recipe. And the crystal malt, I mean, we didn't even call it the same. It was a one-off, obviously. It was a good beer, but definitely not the like subtle, sweet, like well-rounded amber ale that it was before. And so we had to, you know, tinker with it. But I definitely think, especially coming from the home brewing side, because that is, I'd say a home brewer kind of thing is throwing 15 or 20 different specialty grains in there and adding 15 different hops and so I think definitely my approach has changed a lot. I think since we opened, I've definitely gotten better, obviously, at what I do, and especially when it comes to formulating new recipes, and a lot better of if I have an idea, knowing how to get to the end point a little bit, in a more simple way.
Yeah.
And it can be pretty easy, I think, to go overboard or overthink a beer. And
yeah,
a lot of the podcasts, a lot of, you know, talking with way more experienced brewers is, it's, you know, when you look at your grist, everything that's in there should be there for a reason.
Yeah.
And if you can't say why that is there, then you can probably get rid of it.
I like that. Yeah, that's good. Good point.
Thank you, Clint. Powerful guy over here. Appreciate you. What excites you guys about making beer? You guys are in a small space. You guys will have small areas. You're kind of making beer for you and locals. Like, it's minute, but I mean, Clint, Jaren, what makes you, what guys, what still excites you about beer? I want to know this from you guys. Jaren, we'll start with you.
Well, I love making Pilsner beer. And I just love, like, I just love to just try and make it like as clean and as crispy and yummy as possible. I love it when you're making work and everything goes right. I love that, you know, and like, but I also love kind of refining a recipe. So like, that's why Pilsner or, you know, Helles or something is like, it's, I find it, it's entertaining for me to brew it because every time it's like, there's something, one more little thing that you can kind of do to hopefully make it a little better this time, you know, whether it's getting that strike temp just right or the pH right on or whatever it is. It's like, it's always trying to just make that perfect beer, you know. Also, you know, listening to the right song at the right time during the boil or whatever. Mm. We do a funny thing at TF where when we pitch yeast, we play Touch of Grey by the Grateful Dead. And that comes from back in the day, I guess Al Diefenbach who used to run the Desert Edge pub way back when, and he gave Kev his first job. He wouldn't pitch yeast without playing that song. And then also he would play it during Knockout as well. Wow. Just so funny. You know, he's an old deadhead.
I don't have a song. Glenn, do you have a song you have to play or you like listening to while you're brewing?
Again, since we have like this kind of shared space and on our bartender beer tenders are a little eclectic in there, what they like. And so am I. I like a little more weird stuff, some like Mars Volta or I'm a big Tool fan. So
great concert the other day, by the way.
Oh, I missed that.
So generally when I'm in there first thing in the morning, I'm playing some big, you know, loud Tool song, because then when everybody else starts showing up and getting ready to
start changing it up a little bit.
They're like, oh man, he's listening to this garbage again. But I try to take it, and it's the same thing also at home. You know, I think when I was in my teens and 20s, I listened to music all the time at full volume, and now I'm married and have a baby and then spend the rest of my day at the brewery. So there's only those few hours that I get like by myself that I can listen to the stuff that I want to listen to.
So what continues to excite you making beer?
I'm pretty excited about this. I wish our brew house was a little bit bigger, but it is nice to, you know, we have three and a half barrel fermenters, 2 7s and a 10. And I really like just having that ability to, you know, you have an idea. And I mean, you know, we have our staple beers that we try to keep on all the time. And I'm trying to get like really dialed in. If I am making changes to those beers, it's, you know, relatively minor just to kind of try to dial them in. But it is nice some days when I'll show up in the morning and I know I have an empty fermenter, an empty 3.5 barrel fermenter, and I can just like look at what grain I have, check out the hop inventory and kind of not shoot from the hip, but at least, you know, try to be creative in the moment. You know, I think, and it's cool. Even, you know, TF is still, obviously there's the realm of like traditional, this is what we're making and trying, but then still putting out those random beers every once in a while that are, you know, just fun. And like, you're not exactly sure what you're going to get out on the other end or how people are going to like it. So I think it's good to, you know, you get on occasion, you kind of get into that rut of like, you just feel like you're like the kind of rinse and repeat type thing. And then to just try to do something a little bit out of left field is pretty fun every once in a while.
Would it bore you guys to make the same beer over and over and over?
I did that for a long time.
So then that, I guess us as brewers like that creative outlet. We like to be able to do even one-offs or kind of experimental batches.
Yeah.
That's fun. Whether they take a nosedive or a home run. Like that's, I think,
yeah, and even, you know, and then like throwing stuff in barrels. And we've done a, like I mentioned to you guys earlier, we don't have enough space to have like an actual barrel program, but like for our first year anniversary beer, I did a triple that we got some Hungarian white wine barrels, that a friend, Stephen McKay, from Old Town Cellars, they brought back from Oregon, and he was like, hey, I've got these barrels. Do you want to use them? And yeah, like, I, you know, trying to think through the process and what beers would work best in there, but at the same time, just kind of going for it and, you know, every couple weeks, like pulling out a little sample and like, be, you know, surprising yourself a little bit, like, oh, that's actually turning out
not bad. Nice. Yeah. I like this.
Yeah, that's definitely something I look forward to getting going here is beers that I haven't really had the chance to brew a whole lot of, you know. Like farmhouse styles, that's a very broad kind of style, and it can be almost anything you want it to be. So that's something that I haven't really, you know, in the professional world, like either at Red Rock or at TIFF, we haven't done a ton of that type of stuff. We've done a little bit of it with the cool ship and stuff, but that's something I'd like to play around with more here. That excites me. Like the prospect of doing something like that really excites me. And, you know, playing with new ingredients, like you were saying, you've got James's malt in your brew house. I think that like using local ingredients like that, I'd love to go find some wild hops. You know, I'd love to open ferment beer, you know, up in the mountains around here, stuff like that, you know, like, and if it sucks, then it sucks, but it's something I want to do, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy how, I mean, I'm the only brewer, but I mean, it definitely puts some stress on, you know, being out of town for longer periods of time, and like, even if I get sick or something, like it definitely just adds extra stress. And then the other thing is those type of projects. I mean, I've been wanting to take a little sample of wort and go, you know, park it in like one of the little apple orchards or something in Heber, and yeah, just see what comes out. And then every like, all of a sudden it'll be, you know, July, and I'm like, oh shit, I missed that opportunity. Like, it, you know, you just get busy, and that's definitely a goal for the next couple of years, to like try to take more time to actually get those kind of things accomplished. So
let's make it happen, Clint. Let's do it. Jaren and I will come up, and when you're sick, we'll come brew for you.
that sounds fun.
Yeah. When it comes to collaborations and doing, you've done a lot of collaborations with other breweries, other brewers. What's one that you and Helper, what's one of the first collaborations you want to do?
Ooh, I haven't really thought about that much. You know, anybody?
Yeah. It'd be nice to do, I don't know. Nice to have Helper beer kind of in Utah County, Salt Lake County, right? Where people are, the mass majority are.
Mm-hmm.
And then it'd be nice to have that beer here.
Right.
Cool, right.
Well, I'd like to have like a guest taps for all, you know, and like a rotating guest tap for breweries around the state. And then one thing I've kind of toyed around with the idea of, and I haven't really talked to them a whole lot about it, but the folks that just earlier last year started the Etta Place Cidery down in
Torrey.
Mm-hmm. I have some friends that live down there, and I think it'd be fun to kind of maybe do something with them. You know, maybe park a cool ship in their apple orchard, or you know, do a beer cider hybrid or something with them, just because they're, you know, the Southern Utah, kind of a more rural type project. I think that would be fun to tie into. I'll have to get a hold of them. I'm sure you know them. I've met them a couple of times.
Hell yeah. We'll make that happen. We'll talk off.
Yeah, we'll do it.
Yeah, cool. I like that idea. I like that. And then I think it'd be cool to see little powerhouses like you two doing a collaboration.
Yeah,
in the
we
future.
Could do something.
That'd be really cool.
It's always hard to get to try to convince somebody to come do a 3.5 barrel collab. Beer's gone before you can even. But anyway,
do it twice.
No way. I'll totally do it.
I love that. What's when it comes to when you're needing beer help, you know, in this process of opening your own brewery, who are you going to go to for that knowledge, that help, or who do you think you can reach out to in this time of building?
Building, as far as building out the brewery or
building out the brewery and starting it up. Yeah.
Well, I'll definitely consult with Kevin, a lot just cause you know, he went through this 3 years ago anybody who like you went through it, I'm sure I'll ask you some questions.
If I'm just brutally honest, I mean, let's just say I learned a lot about what I would do the second time. I mean, we had like, shoestring budget, and luckily we found a spot that kind of fit what we were trying to do. But I mean, the biggest thing for sure is floor drains and like making sure floors are sloped properly. And like for us, that's the hardest part for me, you know, when it comes to cleaning and stuff, is nothing flows where it should. So everything that should be a quick little process takes so much more time and effort. And I like, yeah, if I'm sitting at TF and watching people clean and they're just, you know, spraying stuff down and it goes nice, where it should. And you're like, oh man, that looks fantastic.
That's nice.
Yeah. The floors are the first thing we're going to do.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I totally agree. You gotta have the floors done right.
Especially if you're going to make sure everything's clean and clean and clean and clean. You gotta make sure it's being drained right away.
Your floor's not cleaned.
So I guess for Heber Valley part two.
Yeah. Yep.
Good floors. I'm excited for your newest space.
Yeah.
When it happens. So, Jaren, when you're not drinking beer, what are you doing? What's the non-brewer do?
Oh.
You go hang out with Amy, you just, you know.
I've got, my lovely wife, Amy, and two children. Violet's 6 years old, and Lucia's about to turn 9. So I like to hang out with them as much as possible because it seems like just yesterday they were born and all of a sudden, you know, Lucia is going to be 9 in a second here and, you know, I'll probably turn around and she'll be 19. Try and absorb that as much as possible. And we like to go on little camping trips around here recently Amy and I have been in the mornings jumping inside of an old wine barrel we had beer in it and ice cold water. We've been doing that every day.
I heard about this. Is this true?
You heard about that?
Yeah. I was supposed to ask you about this. It's one of my questions.
Oh, God.
So from what I hear is you in the mornings, you jump in an ice bath outside.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a level of insanity you have to have in order to do that? Tell me about this.
It sucks. It is not fun. But that's why you do it, you know, because I think that's why people do it.
I think it
trains your mind to like not freak out. You know, I used to do, Wing Chun Kung Fu and we would do Qigong, which is, the basis of like the whole like martial art is learning a breathing exercise, right? In sequence with like certain movements that are applicable to the style of Wing Chun, right? And when you do that, you're moving your body super slowly and you're breathing very deeply, right? And it trains your mind to kind of focus in this certain way so that like if you're get into a real fight, then you can kind of slow everything down and you're not going to freak out and like flail or something.
Straight go to fight or flight. It's kind of more of a balance, more focus.
Yeah, you'll be able to fight instead of trying to run away from it or being overloaded by what's happening, right?
So how long have you been doing this?
Well, I did Wing Chun. I started doing Wing Chun in 2002, but haven't really been training Wing Chun the past since my daughter Lucia was born. I just kind of, because it's very demanding. It's more of a lifestyle than a hobby. And so I made my lifestyle my family instead of Wing Chun, which is sad, but I had to kind of move on. I still practice, but I don't train in class anymore. But like, anyways, back to the ice bath. What it does for your mind is, I think, and physically, like body, you know, your blood flow, circulation, it's really good for that. But really, it's like you get in there, you don't want to get in there, and then you get in and you sit in, like, it's really difficult. It's hard to breathe, but then you, once you're in there for a minute or so, then you can kind of regulate your breathing. And then all of a sudden you're chilling in there. And I've worked my way up to 2 minutes. Maybe I'll get a little bit more, but, then you pop out and, go hit the hot shower or something. Eventually I'll hit the sauna when I build a sauna, but,
what?
It's really good for your physical and mental.
So are you doing this every morning?
Yeah, yeah. Well, every morning I'm here. I don't have one of those in Salt Lake.
So there's a river or pond.
There is a river down the way that I'm going to start jumping in. But I wanted to start with the barrel because jumping in the river is scary because if the current could pick you up and if you're not ready for it, you know, because it's hard to breathe in the cold water. So I didn't want to be too dangerous, but I'm starting to think like, ooh, the river's going to be the next.
You're working your way up, huh?
Yeah.
So how long have you been doing the barrel jumping part?
Oh, like a month or so.
Oh, so this is a new technique you've been trying to do.
I mean, I've known about it for years.
And you're doing it in the dead of winter?
I finally like got up the balls to do it, you know?
Man.
Yeah, we started doing it. The other day we did it.
In the summer, I can see that, but in the winter.
Oh, what? It's the best. Because like the other day we did it, we opened up the barrel and there it was covered, like the top layer was ice. So we had to kind of take the ice chunks out and got in there. But I'll tell you what, man. Like I was like kind of grumpy when I woke up the other morning. Yeah. And we went and Amy was like, I'm just going to go in there. And I was like, fine, you go do it. And then I was like, what am I doing? Like, and so I got my Speedo on there and I went out there and I was like, cause I knew it was going to change. It was change my mind. It would instantly like whatever I was feeling before. That's the other reason to do it. If you're feeling, it'll change your mind. Cause there's only one thing you're focusing on. And then after that,
like a refresh.
You're not giving that energy to everywhere.
It resets your brain. And so it's like,
okay.
Like I was feeling grumpy. The second I hopped out of there, it was a different day, you know?
Yeah. So Clint, we going to Jaren's after this and doing this?
We can. I got the barrel set up.
Yeah, let's do it.
I did it this morning. I'll do it again. Huh?
Damn. I mean, if you got me a warm towel afterwards,
sure, yeah.
I'll do it, dude. Got it. Let's Clint, do it. Would you do something like that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, guys, what's going on? All right. If that happens, it's got to be recorded because that'd be incredible. But I like how you're going with that. You said the word, Clint, refresh, like that mind reset kind of thing. I think we all need that. And it's really cool you're doing that.
Yeah. You know, there's so much noise in the world. And this is a good way to kind of, I don't think it's good to block it out, but it's a good way to kind of take a moment out of it, you know, and also it kind of puts things into perspective. So, yeah.
And it's more, I think, centering for oneself. I think you're just kind of focused on you and not everything else, all that noise you're saying. I kind of like the idea. We should do a Heber Valley barrel jump once a month or something. Now you get your mug club people, and it's like
they would probably be spectating. I think there's a handful. I bet Matt would do it.
For
maybe
sure.
If you,
I'll hit him.
If at least you like said that he wouldn't, then maybe he would.
I don't think he would. But I think I like this. We got to make it like a ritual almost. Like if you're going to come to Helper, one of the cool things about Helper beer is
before you come in, you have to show your ID and you have to jump into the barrel.
You get a pint. You get your first pint free. Well, but then you jump in, you know, you jump in the ice bath.
You know,
you got to do something like that.
That would be a dream come true.
Well,
you know, what's funny is, you know, when you're opening up a brewery and a restaurant, as we've been going through this process, I've kind of realized like, oh, we're not just going to be a brewery and not just a restaurant. It's like, this is the hospitality industry,
for
right?
Sure.
And so one thing I've been thinking about, we're not even open here and I'm already thinking about like another business I want to do down the road that would kind of intertwine would be, it's exactly this, like a cold dunk spa with a sauna like afterward, right?
So I don't know if you've seen that before, but like the traditional Finnish saunas, and there's one specifically that I'm thinking of in Germany. I have this life history of being a ski jumper, so I spent a ton of time in southern Germany, and there's one spot in particular, the coolest sauna setup that I've, they were all the logs were from Northern Finland. They have to stand dead for, it's like 20 years so that all the sap drains out before they cut the wood down. So it, when they heat up, it does, like you can lean against them and it doesn't burn you. But anyway, they also have like a, it's a big, probably 10 gallon bucket that just has a little float switch on it. And it's 10 feet off the ground and it's got a rope on the other side of it. And so it fills with, you know, 40 degree water. And then while you're in the sauna or whatever, you have the go out, the lever down and get like a complete shock. And then go back into like the coolest sauna ever. Like that is worth going to this spot. Yeah. And it's in the Black Forest. So
we can do something like that instead of jumping in it. Yeah. Just like pull, like, here's for the surprise.
I think, that's great. But I think,
I mean, the dunk
getting
is
in it.
Yeah, yeah. Like a prolonged thing. It's more of that quick shock, but it's not like to the point where you have to commit and like actually mentally, like, you know, breathe and get used to the situation, I guess.
Yeah, I think both. It all sounds good. I'm into it. Hold on, though. Did you just say ski jumping? You do ski jumping?
Yeah, that's what my life was
before. So, Clint, tell us about what you did for brewing real quick. Remind people what you did.
I grew up in Steamboat Springs, Colorado, which now I live in Heber, which, you know, so it's like 4.5 hours down the road, basically. But I moved to Utah around 2002 as soon as they got the ski jumps built for the Olympics. And then, I competed in 2002 and 2006. And then I was a coach since then.
In the Olympics?
Yeah.
Whoa.
And so this
badass.
Watching a bunch of guys
that's so cool.
In Beijing right now. This is the first Olympics that I haven't been to since 2002.
Oh, that's right.
So, it's kind of nice actually to be just watching it on TV and hanging out and drinking beers.
I think the first question I asked you, like, hey, you been liking how's the Olympics? Been watching it?
I was watching the men's ski jump last night. It was cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just love what you guys can do. You know, what Olympians, remarkable. I think it's a human, you know. I
can't believe you were doing that.
Yeah.
That was great. And it was the heart of ski jumping is Southern Germany and Austria. I mean, obviously a lot in Scandinavia and stuff as well, but. For sure drank too much beer probably while I was an athlete, but then once you're a coach, then it's more, you know, you get done with work and in the evenings you can actually go out and.
Are you still involved with that up there?
No, I still am in contact with a lot of the guys on the national team. It's a pretty small community in the United States. But the idea for sure at the beginning opening the brew is that I was going to try to stay in the loop a little bit, but there's just no way.
Sure.
It's way too busy, and trying to brew beer and run a business and all that stuff that's all I have time for, really. So
you guys are badass.
I feel it.
I just grow hair. That's it.
Yeah, your hair is luxurious.
Thank you, Jaron. That's all I
kind of remind you. Remind me of the dude who was on American Ninja Warrior.
Yeah, his name's Daniel.
Daniel.
Yeah.
Do you know? You know?
Oh yeah, I get that one. Yeah.
Okay. Very handsome. Yeah. But beautiful.
Jax,
like,
yeah. I'm not that jacked.
It's like semi Kenny G meets
Kenny G with. Troy Polamalu or something.
Okay, yeah.
Or,
you know
what I mean? Yeah. Totally. Yeah. I get Slash and Weird Al a lot.
Oh, yeah.
And from behind, I get Elaine Benes. I don't really like that
behind.
One. Yeah. I turn around like...
Okay, yeah.
So, I mean, I'm used to it. It's all
That's
good.
That's hilarious. I love it.
And there's a Latin singer that I look like. But he also has long hair. But yeah. It's fun, but
I'm sure it helps.
I don't jump in ice baths or jump, you know, ski jump. I don't do any jumping.
You will be jumping in ice baths.
I'd do it for you. So, Clint, what did you bring over?
I just felt like maybe we should dabble in this the grunge IPA before
tell us about the grungy grunge.
This is actually the first High Point beer that we put out. I've tweaked it a little bit. So this We release this same beer in two different, the labels are a little bit different. There's the one that's pretty heavy with Strata hops. This one is the original version, and it's got Centennial, Chinook, and a bunch of Mosaic. So we just canned it a couple days ago, so it's nice and fresh.
Let's break her open. I like that. Did the original have the purple and orange? Which one had the purple?
The label originally went through a couple. I do all the labels, and the original one actually was blank in the middle here, and we, you know, because our canning originally, we just had like a little October seamer, and we only had, we were just filling up, you know, cans from the taps to go, okay, like, kind of like a crowler setup. And we thought we were going to be doing a High Point beer kind of one-offs every once in a while. But then obviously with COVID and switching over to, you know, writing names on beers and labeling everything by hand just wasn't cutting it anymore. So
it must be that Chinook that I'm tasting.
Yeah.
Which is a hop that I've never really used a lot of, but I always like it in beers.
Yeah. It's got like, I don't know, it's somewhere like citrusy, piney kind of, little piney.
I like that malt background on the back too. That's nice.
Yeah. Yeah, it has a nice, like malty kind of...
That's crushable, and it's a High Point.
Yeah, I like that it's not too aggressive when it comes to, like, bitterness or something. Ugh, I hate it when beer's just bitter or something like that. Mm-hmm.
There's no balance. It's got to be about balance.
It's all about balance.
It's all about that balance. I think, did we talk about that last time on the podcast? Yeah.
I love it when people talk about balance.
Whenever you're doing a conference call or a meeting, like, you don't really have to listen as long as every once in a while you chime in and say that it's all about that balance. Hey, Clint, what'd you think about that point? You're like, yeah, I totally agree, but it's all about just finding that balance. And you're like, oh, yeah, good point, good point.
There's some tips, words of wisdom right there, right?
Yeah. That's when you're like, we're going to have to circle back about this and touch base next week or something.
But ultimately, it's about finding the balance. Yeah.
That's a good one.
That's good. I'm going to use that.
So, Jaron, a couple last questions for you boys. I guess let me ask Clint this first. What's some advice that you would give Jaron right now going in this feat, not just the floors, but in going in this endeavor in this next chapter of his life? What was some advice you would give him as from a brewer to brewer, homie to homie?
I don't know. I mean, honestly, Jaron has more real world experience in a brewery than I do, a lot more. You know, I think I went from the home brewing side, had a little, you know, tried to get as much knowledge and experience from my buddy Chris as I could, but as far as real world in a professional brewing setup, I'm sure he's on it. The business running side has definitely been tricky. You know, figuring out where the best way to, you know, spend your dollar and you know, I just don't think I have any groundbreaking information that probably he doesn't already know. Like the people that are out front serving the beer are super important, and having some people that you like and trust, and you know, having that, like, I think what a small brewery provides is that community and a personal feeling. Where people actually can see the guy that makes the beer, which, I mean, now that I'm just brewing beer more in the mornings, like, I don't know how many times, generally our like 3 o'clock crew that comes in, I hang out with them a little bit, whatever, but there's times where I you know, come back in and in the evening and see somebody like, oh my God, I thought you still work here? Like, you're like, yeah, we're making more beer than we ever have. So yeah, I haven't been gone, but you know, try anyway. I need to spend more time probably showing my face around in the evenings and whatever. I mean, that's all we did the first year and a half. Like, me and Greg lived at the brewery, which that'll probably never totally stop. But you know, I think that personal connection and creating that little community is like the probably the number one thing. And then the rest, like if that's done right, the rest is easy, especially if you're making good beer, then it's easy.
It's awesome, Clint. Thank you. Jaron, what's some words of advice from brewer to brewer you would give to Clint?
Oh, I would just say continue to make good beer, because I think you're already doing it, which is awesome. I know how challenging that can be on a, like, starting up and then also, like, on a small system, you know, like, but it's, from what I can tell, you've overcome some of those challenges with, like that can happen from, like, going from home brewer to pro brewer and then, you know, maybe not knowing the best way to do the, like, certain processes. It seems like you're doing a great job. Like, I can taste it in your beer. So I don't know how much I would have to say about that, but just continue to make good beer. And then I think you're right on, though, with saying, like, doing it for the people and the community around you that's supporting you. You know, that's something that we hope to do down here. Because, like, you asked, like, does Helper need a beer scene? It's like, yeah. Yes, they do, you know, because this place is going to, it's not just, and your place is not just a brewery and a place to drink a beer. It's a place for the community to kind of gather and hang out. And that's what pubs have always been for time in memoriam, right? It's like where people go to kind of chew the fat or whatever and have a pint and like, communities aren't communities without something like that, you know? And it's easy for like a community or a town or whatever to kind of lose its way without a place to gather, you know?
Yeah.
So we're hoping to kind of strengthen that in Helper. It's already been going on the revitalization here. So, but like that to me is like, that's the reason to do it, you know? Yeah. And I appreciate you saying that because it's like, it kind of keeps it in focus for me, you know? So I don't know what else to say other than that.
That's awesome. Well, thank you. I want to say, gentlemen, Clint, thanks for coming down, driving down here and sharing some of your product and your words of wisdom with us today. You are an example to me, and I hope I can brew with you soon, right. Dude. I really do.
Appreciate it.
I'm glad we're homies. Jaron, I'm excited for you in the future.
Yeah.
It's nice to get to know you a little bit better today.
Absolutely.
Let us know whatever we can do to help Helper Beer go through, dude. I mean, we're here for you. Is there anything else that we can do for you in the meantime?
I don't know, man. I just really appreciate you guys coming down here and kind of, you know, thinking about us down here. I know that we're off the beaten path a little bit, but it's really actually kind of on the pathway, you know, but
there's two ways down to the south, really,
like, right?
I-15 and then this way,
right? But no, it means a lot to me that you would want to, you know, have this conversation, and I'd love to do it some more, you know.
All right, let's make it happen.
That's what we can do, you know.
Yeah, sure, absolutely. So when this starts happening, let us know what we can do to promote it and blow it up, and let's get going.
Cool, yeah.
And we're down here. We'll come down here again for sure.
Heck yeah.
For sure, even during construction, I'd love to see it.
Well, yeah, let's go check out the town and maybe jump in that ice bath, huh?
Okay, you got an hour.
You only need 2 minutes.
Okay, sounds good. But is there anything else you guys need to talk about today before we leave?
No, I'm good. Let's do it again.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys. Again, thank you so much. But until the next beverage, my friends. Cheers.
All right, cheers. Cheers. Thank you.
This has been another episode of The Tastemasters. You can find us on Instagram @the_Tastemasters, on Twitter @TheTastemasters, and on Facebook as The Tastemasters. Like, share, subscribe, leave us a review, tell your friends, and thanks for listening.
Produced and recorded @Fuse Audio. Give them a follow @Fuse_Audio.